fatto, che storo fatto. Domoroli canto, kick to home radio, da 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 da.
Me Radio. Tonight, we've got executive producer, teacher, writer Michael Uslan on talking about Batman 1989 and other Batman adjacent things. We'll get into all that. Later on, we'll be talking with director Chad Barrett about his new indie horror film, Scalper. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. And if you don't know, Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules and more. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
And if you're driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you out there. Thank you very much for tuning in and making us part of your Sunday night. If you're watching us on YouTube and Facebook, streaming us out there on the web, hello to all of you, and we appreciate you watching. And of course, if you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form, on whatever platform you get your podcasts, we appreciate you finding us there. Hopefully you've already subscribed and left us a nice 5-star review. That always helps us out in our search engine optimization. So if you haven't done that yet, we would appreciate if you did. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube, click the subscribe button and hit the bell notification. You'll get a little notification every time we go live with a new show like we do every Sunday. My first guest, I'm so excited to talk to this gentleman. I've been a fan of his for a while. I took his rise of the superheroes and pop culture from the edX Smithsonian with him and Stan Lee as co-professors back in 2017. We've got him on the show now. Executive producer, teacher, writer, attorney, Michael Uslan. Thanks for being on the show tonight, sir.
I can't wait. I've been waiting for this for a while. My wife's family is out of St. Louis, so it's meaningful for everybody.
Fantastic. So many things to talk about, and I want to start with your teaching, because it's the way the comic book industry has kind of just grown and expanded, and I sat down a couple days ago and rewatched the history of Batman that's on the Batman 1989 Blu-ray to kind of go, and it just blows my mind all the stuff that has contributed. They are like the modern day gods of Greek mythology. When you started teaching the course, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you kind of took over from Roger Stern and expanded the course. Am I correct?
Well, Sterno and I were both teaching a course. At that time, I was teaching, this was in the early 1970s, what we called the Free University, which was holding outdoor classes at Indiana University on comic books. Sterno was doing it inside a classroom. Mm. And he said he had kind of enough of that. So I kind of combined the two into one and built it out. So ultimately, we had a 3-hour course.
And becoming an attorney, was that something that you kind of saw that as a road in case the comic book area didn't work out? That was the law degree is a fallback thing. How did that tie in?
In truth, it kept me out of Vietnam. I got my student 2S deferment continued. I tried to get a creative job in the motion picture and television industry, sent out 372 resumes,
wow.
Got 2 job offers, one in LA, one in New York, said, move here on your own and we'll pay you $90 a week to go for coffee or to work in the mailroom. I was just about to get married, and I didn't think my wife and I could live on $95 a week in either New York or LA.
Right.
So it was plan B. Go to law school, take every course I could find having anything to do with copyright, communications, and entertainment, and see if I couldn't get my foot in the movie and television industry that way. And plan B worked. As soon as I got out of law school, I went to work at United Artists, which back then was one of the major motion picture studios.
Yeah.
And I got great training. I learned how you finance and produce movies. I networked like mad. And that set me on the road to where I needed to go.
I love the whole story. I want to ask, because sometimes you read things on the internet and it's not always correct. But if I'm not mistaken, you basically asked Warner Publishing for the rights at no charge to Swamp Thing, and that's how you got into producing movies on your own. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had already bought the rights to Batman and then realized that it was going to take me 2 to 3 years before I could get Batman up and running. Little did I realize it would wind up taking 10 years from the time we bought the rights till we were able to get the first movie made in 1989. So I needed a new income somehow. So I said, okay, we got to be able to do a real down and dirty, cheap movie as fast as possible. I went back to him. This was just maybe a month or two later, and said, I want to buy the rights to Swamp Thing. And Warner Books was very surprised. They didn't know DC published something called Swamp Thing. They thought it was a silly, stupid title and had no value whatsoever. And they found out it was no longer being published. So I said, we'll do a movie. We'll blow the smoke and the dust off of it. And you'll bring it. DC will bring it back. He said, we'll never bring it back. That thing is worthless. So I said, you're right, it is worthless, so give it to us for free.
Wow.
And we promised to spend at least $15,000 of our own money developing it as a movie. Bottom line, I wound up with the rights to Swamp Thing, and every story, character, or whatever ever appearing in the pages of Swamp Thing, so I wound up also owning Constantine.
Man, see, that's... I'm going to go off on so many tangents here. Like I said, I need you for like 5 hours, Michael. But Constantine was one of those shows when NBC canceled after one season. I was beyond livid. It was building up to so much with the Dr. Vane helmet and the House of Mystery. And it was just so many ways it could go. And thankfully, Legends of Tomorrow, of all shows, kind of saved Constantine and brought him back in. What were your thoughts on that first season of Constantine? And why did NBC let it go so easily?
Well, for me, it was all about the 10 years it took to get the years it took to get the Constantine film up and running. I couldn't go back after Batman and say, I want to do Adam or Hawkman. I had to find something really, really special, something really, really different. For me, that was Constantine. But the problem always with Constantine, to make it into any media, there was no way you could hold up a comic book in front of an executive and say, you get it? Like, you know, the Hulk, oh, he's green and he gets mad and he gets big. I get that. But not with Constantine. So I pitched it as the James Dean of the occult world.
Oh, nice.
That was the hook that grabbed them for this. Then it took me 6 months to find the right writer. Found Kevin Broadbent. We worked on it for 6 months because I knew, unlike Batman or any traditional comic book superhero, there's no way we could pitch it to a studio without having the A to B to C, every beat of three acts of the story nailed. So we did that, went into Warner Brothers, did the pitch. They said, oh my God, if you could work with anyone on this lot, who would you want to work with? I said, the Donners. I want to work with Dick Donner, Lawrence Hulder Donner. And 15 minutes later, they were in the office. We pitched the whole thing again, and we got the ball rolling at that point in time. And then, happily, Francis Lawrence came aboard, and that launched his theatrical film career as a director.
Man, it's just astonishing, all this stuff. And again, I would love to talk about Swamp Thing, because you had Wes Craven as the director in that first film, and you had the great Louis Jourdan, and you had Adrien Barbeau. Just what an amazing cast. Were you, just to touch on it briefly, did you have oversight into who was being cast in that first movie, since it was kind of the first, your big foray into it?
I had never produced a movie before. I was still a kid in my 20s. And we had half the money being put up by United Artists for foreign rights and half by Avco Embassy Pictures for domestic rights. So they had the right to approve the role of Adrien and the role of the villain, Arcane. So we had to find something that would satisfy everyone globally. And ultimately, we pitched Adrien and Louis, and they both could agree to that. Understand, with that first Swamp Thing movie, it was $1.9 million below the line that we had to spend to make that movie.
Wow.
And it is to this day still considered to be either the greatest or one of the greatest fire gag stunt sequences in the history of cinema.
And the Swamp, I said I'm not going to talk about Swamp Thing then and go back, because so many people were disappointed that the Swamp Thing series that we had only got one season there. A lot of people were hoping we'd get more of it. It was kind of, I know a lot of my friends were going back to rewatch the original Swamp Thing, Return of Swamp Thing from the 82 and 89. Was there any decisions as far as why that was only given one season on DC Universe?
It's all very complicated.
Okay.
But beyond that, as I'm sure you know, because the heads of DC Films now have talked about it, Swamp Thing is one of the big, big targets for DC Films as a feature film.
Good.
And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled about that.
And all the stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, as is Constantine, too.
Yes, that's another one everyone's looking forward to. Everyone's kind of wondering if we'll get Johnny Depp back in the role or if Matty Ryan will get to do the feature film. Everyone loves Keanu Reeves, obviously. He's had great success with the John Wick ones, especially. That's a huge franchise. But Matt Ryan, for me, just exemplifies Constantine. That's like pitch-perfect casting right there.
You know what I love, and I especially about Batman, this applies to Batman, it's that every filmmaker who comes in with an understanding, knowledge, and love for Batman, who has that passion, who has a vision for Batman and knows how to execute that vision, every time, and as you know, the Batman movies are really about Bruce Wayne, not Batman. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a new Bruce Wayne, they bring something different to it, whether it's a Bruce Wayne just starting out, tripping over his own feet, unsure of himself, trying to figure out who he is, as in the Batman. Or you can have like Batman versus Superman, where he's in his mid-40s, he's bitter, he's frustrated, doesn't want any part of it anymore, and everything in between. It's miraculous. But what's cool about the comics and the movies is that each fan, each person in the audience has their own personal favorite Batman.
Sure.
They know what is their particular one true Batman. And the key is we have to present many different versions, many different actors, and respect everyone's opinion as to what and who works best for them.
And one of the things, to your point, that I loved about the new Robert Pattinson one is because just the style of everything from the Batmobile to the atmosphere of the film felt like it was right out of that 70s Steve Englehart, Marshall Rogers run on Detective that I love so much. There's just the aesthetic just oozed Marshall Rogers and Steve Englehart to me. I absolutely loved it.
Well, you know, I went back into the deep, dark files and found the original. This was before email. My original letter to the powers that be at that time at the studio saying, please, we got to have the ability to show off Bruce Wayne, Batman, as the world's greatest detective.
Right.
And early on, we were getting a lot of, well, let's just keep blowing stuff up and showing off all the gimmicks and selling some toys here. I had to wait 32 years. To get the movie of Batman as the world's greatest detective. And I can actually sit here and tell you it was worth the wait.
Yeah, I mean, it was just that's one of the things I loved about it because it did put such a focus on his detective skills, which we're talking about Batman 1989, this being the 35th anniversary. That was a very well-balanced Batman, though. We did get to see like his chemical when he's trying to find the antidote to the Joker's poison that he was poisoning the city with and everything like that. So we did get to see that detective side of him as well. We got to see the vulnerable person who's lost his parents and now he's on a quest for vengeance. We got to see that cool fighting style Batman. I thought 1989 is, in my mind, and it could be nostalgia talking as well, a nearly perfect film.
It's my dream come true. I mean, it's what I dreamed of as a kid. This whole thing about doing dark and serious Batman movies started for me a cold night in January 1966. The Batman TV series debuted that night. I had been waiting for this thing for months. I was so excited. And about 20 minutes in, I realized, oh, my God, this is a joke. This is a comedy. The whole world is laughing at Batman. And that killed me. And that night after the show, down in our downstairs den, I made a vow, like young Bruce Wayne once made a vow. And I always qualify it. He made his vow over the slaughtered bodies of his parents in the street. And my parents were safe in the kitchen. But I said, somehow, someday, I will show the world the true Batman of Bill Finger and Bob Kane, the creature of the night stalking deeply disturbed villains. And I was committed to find a way to eliminate from the collective consciousness of the world culture these three words popping out at me, pow, zap, and wham. and that's where it started. So for me, this is all dream come true stuff. I am a fanboy. I am a geek. By the time I graduated high school, I had over 30,000 comic books dating back to 1936. I attended the first comic book convention ever held on the planet Earth. I lived an hour outside of New York and got my parents to take me and my friend Bobby up on Tuesday afternoons to the DC Comics tour when we were out of school. Mm. I met Stan Lee when I was 11 years old at Marvel Comics. This has been my life. This has been my passion. And I got to know most of the people who created all of these characters, who drew them, who wrote them, who edited them. So I feel going forward, I always have a personal responsibility. Comics were mocked and denigrated for so many decades. Yeah. And these people, these creators were so disrespected. And now today, thanks partly at least to all the efforts we've all made, the artwork is hanging in museums and galleries. Yeah. And they're getting the respect they deserve. And maybe they're not here for it, but certainly their kids and grandkids are. And that for me is the big win.
Yeah, I mean, I used to think that I was the number one Batman fan, and then I did more and more of a deep dive research into you, and I'm going to have to relinquish that title to you, I think, for sure. It's just amazing. I feel like I've, you know, my misspent youth, here you are at 28, financing and producing a DC Comics film, and, you know, I don't even remember what I was doing at that age, but it wasn't anything productive, so I want to be you when I grow up.
That is so funny. Well, I purposefully titled my memoir, The Boy Who Loved Batman,
yeah,
because everyone who reads it, I want to say, oh, wait a minute, I'm the boy who loved Batman too, or I'm the girl who loved Batman. And it's very important. We all have that passion and we all have that sense of wonder. And those of us who are lucky adults have never lost it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I did have one of our sponsors, Larry Quiggins of Bugs Comics. He wanted me to tell you that the where'd it go? Sorry. He said he wanted to point out that the Green Hornet and Lone Ranger miniseries are one of his favorite series of all times. He just wanted me to pass that along to you.
Thank you very much for that. I grew up with these characters. They were very important to me. And due to legal reasons, the true story, the full story of the Reed family saga, because the Lone Ranger is the great uncle to the Green Hornet, and how that torch was passed and the Green Hornet became the modern day urban version of the Lone Ranger and Tonto. It was the first time in over 85 years it could be told. And I was so lucky that Nick Barucci over at Dynamite asked me if I would write it.
We have another question from Zachary Nathanson. Wanted to say if it was one of those things where you could have picked David Bowie to play the Joker, would you have also let him score the 89 version of Batman? Prince obviously did a great job scoring it and doing the music for it, but was David Bowie ever in the back of your mind rattling around as a Joker character?
Not for that. He wasn't, but I have to tell you, I spent an entire afternoon with David Bowie. Hmm. It was one of the most memorable days of my life. And we got into philosophy, into politics, into we talked about everything. I was trying to convince him to let us do a computer animated feature film of Ziggy Stardust.
Oh, wow.
And the Spiders. And his lawyers wanted him to do a Broadway play. And we were going back and forth. It was fabulous. I am a huge, huge Bowie fan, obviously.
Yeah, it's just like I said, I'm not sure who's going to play you in the movie of your life at some point, Michael. But I'm wondering if you already have casting choices in mind, because it's amazing all the stuff that you've gotten to experience and do just through your sheer force of will and that vow you made in your parents' basement, which I love that story. I'm going to take a very quick commercial break. You're okay to stick with me for a while longer, yes?
Yeah, you bet.
Perfect. All right, we are going to take a very brief commercial break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to chat more with Michael Uslan. We'll try to get to your text if you have a text you'd like to send us in the chat, or you can text us on the KTRS text line at 84126. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Every Sunday on the Big 550 KTRS, I'm your host, James Enstall, the voice of Kevin Conroy. I thought it was appropriate to bring us back from commercial break. Well, make sure we tell you about our official comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games. I know Larry just had that question, so I know Larry's listening. If you are wanting to get into comic books, like we were talking, Michael said he had 30,000 comic books when he was a kid. Maybe you're looking to get into comic books. Maybe you're seeing all these movies like The Batman or like Blue Beetle, and you're wanting to get into these comic books, but you don't know where to start. Let Larry be your personal comic concierge. You can go see him at Bugs Comics, easily accessed from either Highway 70 or Highway 364, right there on Bryan Road in O'Fallon. You can go check it out. I always say it's not a comic book store if it doesn't have back issues, and Larry's got back issues galore, long boxes full of them. He's got beautiful books in the case, so whatever your price point is, if you just want to spend a couple dollars and get some issues, that's great. If you want to spend a couple $100, he's got some really nice comics in his case, too, like the first appearance of Punisher. I think last time I was in there, he had the first Thing versus Hulk fight, both parts, Fantastic Four 25 and 26. So a lot of great comics. He's got books on the wall that you can kind of browse, and then if you're not sure, ask him. He'll point you in the right direction. New comics every week, and if you want to save some money, join the Avengers Club. That way you can start saving money on your new issues, your back issues, your toys, your games, your bag, your boards, and you can enjoy your hobby in this economy without having to worry about how much money you're spending. Start saving money, join the Avengers Club. You can also follow him on Instagram at Bugs Comics and Games. Give their Facebook page a like, too. Let him know you heard about it here on Geek to Me Radio. Very proud to have Bugs Comics and Games as the official comic book sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. We're talking with Michael Uslan about all things Batman. Right before we went to break, I mentioned someone's got to play you in the life of Michael Uslan, which The Boy Who Loved Batman is being made into a Broadway show.
It's unbelievable. And it's the Niederlander Organization of New York. Broadway is basically the Niederlanders and the Schuberts, and then there's always Disney. But they are working very, very hard and fast on this. It's just incredible. And pretty soon we're going to be talking about casting, and it's just so surrealistic about talking about people who can play me between the ages of, let's say, 20 and 38. It's a wild, wild ride.
That's amazing. And again, these books are available. We always recommend, if you can, go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it. But two books, Batman's Batman and The Boy Who Loved Batman, both by Michael Uslan. And we mentioned earlier that I was able to take that. I was the very first person in the very first course when you launched it through edX, through the Smithsonian, the rise of superheroes and their impact on pop culture with you and Stan Lee. And you've had, if I'm not mistaken, a lifelong friendship with Stan Lee, which is absolutely incredible as well.
Yeah, and I met him when I was 11. And met him and Jack Kirby up at Marvel Comics. They signed my copy of All Winners number 18.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when I started teaching the comic book course at Indiana University, and it got all this massive global attention, I was doing radio and TV talk shows, and there were television cameras in every single class I taught. It was an incredible time. And one of the first calls I got was from Stan. He said, Mike, I'm watching you on TV. I'm reading about you in newspapers. What you're doing is great for the whole comic book industry. How can I help you?
Wow.
And at that moment, Stan changed from my idol to my mentor and then to my friend. And we had a chance to work together creatively. And my son, David, and I were two of the producers of his memorial at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And now I'm very proud to say at the Comic-Con Museum in Balboa Park in San Diego, we have curated Excelsior, The Life and Legacy of Stan Lee. It's there now, and it's running until April. Wow. And it has historic pieces of original art by Kirby, Ditko, Gene Colan, Bill Everett. It's really wild and wonderful, and I recommend it highly to anyone within striking distance of San Diego.
I'm a first-round investor in Legion M, and I was at that ceremony where he has hands imprint. And it was just spectacular to see, if I pardon the pun, spectacular to see that whole thing and witness him being celebrated. I know it was shortly after his wife passed, but he was still in such good spirits, and what a fun time that was.
Incredible. Really incredible.
I was going to ask you, because we're talking this, like I said, this is the 35th anniversary of Batman, the 1989 film, and it's the 25th anniversary of Batman Beyond debuting on Fox Kids. You've had... When I looked up, I don't think there's been a Batman film, be it animated or live action, you haven't been a part of. Without counting the live action, if we dip into the animated, which, again, was groundbreaking, that entire series, and then Mask of the Phantasm in 1993, of all the animated films, do you have a favorite one that you feel best captures the essence of Batman?
Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. It is arguably the greatest Batman story ever done in the media. I'll go that far. It gave us Kevin Conroy as the voice of Bruce Wayne and Batman. It gave the world the voice of Mark Hamill defining the voice of the Joker. It holds up beautifully today. 2023, we celebrated its 30th anniversary, which was incredible. And it's a real tribute to Kevin, you know, in particular. But if you go beyond that, you've got Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
Yes.
That is an incredible piece of work that has gotten, it won the Annie Award. It's worth looking at. I suggest people get the R-rated version.
Yes, definitely.
To take a look at that. You go back to the brilliance of Batman the Animated Series and the fantastic, talented people, Bruce Timm, Eric Radomski, Paul Dini, Andrea Romano, Alan Burnett. I mean, there are so many. I almost hate to name them. Look at that, the two-parter, the Mr. Freeze.
Yes, Heart episode. Eyes, yes.
Oh, my God. You know, that stuff was utterly spectacular. Sub-Zero. On Leather Wings, I could just sit here and spout them off one after another. But also, don't forget more recent stuff, for example, Under the Red Hood.
Yes.
They're just brilliant, brilliant stories being churned out by Warner Animation.
Yeah, I know one of my very favorite Batman stories of all time took place in Justice League, the Tower of Babel, which I thought was such a brilliant story. And it shows just how cunning and ruthless Batman is, where he's got these plans to take down the Justice League. And it shows, to me, that is almost a perfect Batman story. When you look at all the different artists and writers who have done it throughout the years, if you had to take a Mount Rushmore of Batman artists, your four favorites, who would they be?
Holy moly. You know, all right. So I don't think I could do four. And you have to understand, I knew them all.
Sure.
I knew Bob Kane. I knew Jerry Robinson. He was near and dear to me. I knew Lou Sayer Schwartz. Did not ever meet Dick Sprang. I'm really sorry about that. All right. So if I have to break it down, there's no way I can boot Jerry off of Mount Rushmore. There's no way I could boot Dick Sprang off of Mount Rushmore. Carmine Infantino, what he brought to that party was amazing. And then, of course, well, how do I not put Neil Adams on there?
Sure.
So there's four right there before I even get to Marshall Rogers or Frank Miller, and so many other great ones over the decades. But that's kind of where I'm stuck at.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard to narrow down four of anything. And that, like, as I could also do the same thing with writers, but I feel like you'd be in the same fix there.
Yeah, well, writers, certainly Bill Finger, Denny O'Neill, Gardner Fox would be an argument to make. Look at the greats. If there was anything great Bob Haney ever did, it was The Brave and Bold with Jim Aparo. Yeah. I mean, that was great, great stories in that as well. And then you get to the modern day era, you know, starting with Steve Englehart. Len Wein did fantastic job. Scott Snyder, I couldn't boil it down to a Mount Rushmore. No way.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like I said, being the fan I am, I've got the Batman books rival by far any other grouping of comic books in my collection, just with the sheer number of great stories that have been throughout the years, all the stuff that, like you mentioned, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo doing Court of Owls is a modern day, probably one of the top books of the 2000s for me as far as Batman storylines go. With the works you've done on everything else, like I said, I've got pages upon pages here we're not going to be able to get to. I feel like one of the underrated Batman's animated series is The Batman, with Reno Romano as the voice of Batman, the Jackie Chan style of animation. I feel like that is sandwiched right in between Batman the Animated Series and Batman Brave and the Bold, and sometimes those five seasons for some reason get lost in the shuffle, but they were so good. The voice acting, the storytelling, everything. What were your thoughts on that series?
Well, you bring something up that's, I think, really, really important. You look at the world today, and you look at the importance and influence of manga and anime. And there's no way you can turn your back on that. It's got to be part of Batman one way or another. Batman must be workable internationally. And I think the work on Batman Ninja it just stands out. Yeah. And I'm afraid of revealing too much, but there's another one coming out from a different international culture. that will be out within the year. And there's more, you know, being talked about. It's just, I think it's a very important part of Batman. And I love the idea of doing, seeing Batman in animation that has a heavy manga anime influence.
Yeah, we had Roger Craig Smith on last year talking about voicing Batman in that up, and he just had the best time voicing Batman. I don't see how you couldn't have a good time voicing Batman, because it's one of those characters that just is, it's timeless. I mean, everyone knows the bat symbol internationally. Everyone knows who Batman is, like Spider-Man and Superman. It's just international recognition, which is hard to think about. You know, 1939, we're still talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before I let you go, I know I don't want to keep you too much over your time. One of the things I know people were talking about, and I'm not expecting you to give me a straight, clear answer on this is why, but a lot of people were so upset that the Batgirl movie got shelved. Do you know, is there anything, could that possibly be a direct-to-DVD release? Is there any talk about doing something else with that? Because it was one of those things that kind of boggled a lot of people's minds, and now so many people are curious about it, as much as people want to see the Joel Schumacher cut of Batman Forever and everything like that. Anything you can mention about that at all?
Yeah, you know, if God is really an accountant, or a tax guy, we would have to talk to God about, you know, what happened there and why and what it means. That is so far out of my stratosphere. I couldn't even begin to comment on it.
Gotcha. I figured I'd throw it out, because you never know. Some people have different perspectives and things like that, so I wanted to at least get your take on it. So much more we could talk about, but I don't want to keep you over time. I'd love to have you back on, though, at some point. I'll shoot you a message and see if you're free later in the year. We'd have you back on for the second and third portions of my notes that I had.
I would love to do that. Let me just wrap up. We kicked off Batman's 35th anniversary with Batman in Concert. It's on a world tour. It is the movie projected back up on the big screen with a full live symphony orchestra playing the soundtrack to it. It is an incredible experience. It will give you chills. And if you have a chance, if it's coming anywhere near you, I would recommend it. And the last thing, since Stanley always told me, Michael, get in the plug when you can. I also have recorded and narrated the Audible book version of my memoirs, The Boy Who Loved Batman, and Batman's Batman.
Perfect. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. We'll find the link and we'll link that in the show notes. If you're listening to this in the podcast form, scroll down to the bottom of the page. We'll have a link to that for an Audible if you want to hear that one as well. Hopefully we had St. Louis Symphony does a lot of great things. They had Empire Strikes Back for the anniversary of that for the 40th and shown on the screen with the orchestra play. So hopefully Batman will be coming to St. Louis. That'd be great to see.
Awesome. And remember, Lee Falk, the great man who created The Phantom and Mandrake, was from St. Louis.
That's right. Another, and we've got Ken Page, and we've got a lot of great, we're very proud of St. Louis and our alumni from here. So, Michael Uslan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, James. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Be well. There Bye. He goes, Michael Uslan. Just so much more I could, and I was trying to watch the chats, and I know a lot of you had questions. I was trying to get as much stuff in as I could. So if I didn't get to your question, I do apologize. I was trying to be cognizant of that and ask what I could when I could. Hopefully we'll have him on again, because, man, what a fount of information he is. And like I said, I can't think of a more appropriate expert on Batman, especially since we're talking about Batman for the 35th anniversary of the 1989 film. We are going to take another quick commercial break. We're going to come right back and we'll chat with director Chad Barron about his horror movie Scalper. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hi, I'm Naomi Grossman, best known as Pepper from American Horror Story, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back. Geek to Me Radio. I'm your host, James Enstall. Want me to make sure we tell you about our official premier sponsor, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. Longtime listeners will know the website, discoverstcharles.com. If you are looking for someplace new to check out in 2024, maybe you've made it a bucket list thing to, hey, we're going to explore some places we haven't gone before, whether you're on the East Coast, like my last guest, Michael Uslan, or whether maybe you might be on the West Coast, like my upcoming guest, Chad, you can always check out the City of St. Charles, where right in the middle of the country. The line from Waiting for Guffman, we're bi-coastal if you count the Mississippi as a coast. So that's a great place to come visit. If you're looking for a great place to get some food, if you're looking for some unique shopping and dining experiences, if you are just wanting to get out and enjoy the outdoors, maybe not now that it's winter so much, but coming spring and warmer months, you can bike ride the Katy Trail, go play Frisbee with your dog in Frontier Park, or all sorts of fun activities. You start at the website, discoverstcharles.com. They've got a Valentine's Festival coming up. Whether you are pro-Valentine's or anti-Valentine's, it's going to be a fun festival that kind of treats both sides of that coin, as you can interact with the likes of Mrs. Havisham, or Romeo and Juliet will be performing Shakespeare sonnets. You can interact with these live characters. Plus, there'll be singing groups, and of course, the shops will have specialty things going on as well. Check out the website to plan your trip. No matter what time of year you want to come, it's always a good time to check out St. Charles. The website, once again, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. My next guest is a director. He's got a new movie coming out called Scalper, which is an indie horror movie. It looks brutal and gruesome. If you like horror, this might be one you want to check out. Director Chad Farron joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being on. Just looking at your pedigree, starting out with trauma films, everything like that, and all the stuff you've done movies on a budget of $15,000 for some of your early ones. And now it feels like they're growing and becoming a little more intense. Were you always a fan of the horror genre? Is that kind of what you knew you wanted to be your wheelhouse?
Yeah, you know, it all started growing up watching, you know, a 13-inch black and white TV and, you know, Alfred Hitchcock Presents or The Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, all those things, kind of getting that fantasy, dark mind of mine brewing. And those were the greatest inspirations as a young kid, and having a television as your babysitter, you know, it was something that, you know, and then when the, you know, my parents brought home a Betamax, it was a whole new world of, you know, being Taxi Driver or, you know, Clockwork Orange or any of these things that just, you know, blew a young impressionable mind. And, you know, and I think that's kind of where the darker end comes, but not necessarily, you know, that's all. It's just a love for cinema in general. And it's just, you know, I think for me, you know, the darker things, especially in the world today where it's already pretty dark, it's kind of just a good escape to get into something like that. And, you know, horror is just, you know, one of those things that a genre I love, you know.
And there's so many different genres within horror, because you've got the slasher, you've got the supernatural, you've got the psychological, and this one seems to encompass a little bit of all three of those, the way the story kind of talks out. So if you would give people, without spoiling anything, give people kind of a synopsis of what they can expect from Scalper.
Sure. Well, Scalper is basically a kind of a standalone sequel in a way to a film I did a couple years ago called Nightcaller, about a telephone psychic who gets a phone call from a serial killer, and she's able to predict his murders before he commits them. So he kind of sees this as, hey, am I going to get caught? You know, so he kind of starts using her as, you know, a bounce board of her visions to see if what's going to happen next, if he's going to do this or that or that. And she's trying to stop him, and he's trying to, you know, just get more information. So it's kind of this cat and mouse game. And Scalper continues where Nightcaller left off, whereas more of a whodunit and more of the fantasy psychic elements into this version. But you don't necessarily have to see the first one to, you know, it has its own thing going, which is kind of a nice thing of a sequel. You don't have to see the first film to be caught up and get the story going.
And the Red Band trailer kind of gives you the impression that is this a copycat? Is this somehow the original come back from the dead? So I kind of like that interesting element of it too, that it's not like, sure, we know it's Michael Myers, or we know it's Jason, like the Friday the 13th and Halloween series. This is kind of has a little bit of ambiguity there, which is very interesting.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things where I think a little mystery, like, you know, the giallo films of Mario Bava or Dario Argento, or, you know, any of those things where you have the gloved killer and the, you know, the mystery element of it, and is interesting to me, because I always like the idea of, you know, a Columbo episode mixed with a slasher film is really kind of a neat, you know, element. I love police procedurals, you know, from going back again, back to the television set, of being a big fan of Dragnet, or Highway Patrol, or these things that have the police, you know, seeing how the police system works and interjecting that into a slasher film was a fun thing for me, to pay homage to things that inspired me as a kid.
I always think it's fascinating because you and I are about the same age, and it's one of those things that I grew up and I'd stay up late at night, 2 a.m. and watch Mannix on Channel 2 here in St. Louis. And now there's so much content out there. I don't see how people who are, you know, even 20 years younger than me can try to digest it all. Before, you know, we had five, not to be all old man, get off my lawn, but we had five channels and we had a, you know, a VHS player if we were lucky. But now it's amazing the amount of content that's out there.
Yeah, no, it's really kind of hard to soak it all in. That's why I'm kind of an old school kind of guy. I still have Laserdisc. I still have Betamax. I still have VHS. I still have all the things that I would prefer to watch the stuff. I'm not a big streaming guy. I rent my movies from the library now because it's like, you know, video stores are dead.
Yeah.
But I like the physical aspect of it and seeing it and touching it and bringing it home, popping it in the player and like, okay, this is great. I can pause it when I want. It's not, it's just a freedom that I enjoy. So of course, streaming is great to find a little hidden thing the same way a video store that had, you know, the mom and pop. We had a great mom and pop video store here, Jerry's Rerun Video, that had everything, including bootlegs of anything and everything. So you could always kind of find anything or get turned on to some weird stuff from, you know, Mogadishu or something, a movie that you've never heard or see anywhere. And it just blows your mind of what's being made in other countries then. And now it's all over the internet. So you're like you said, it's a daunting thing to find the stuff you want and not get, you know, overwhelmed by it.
And especially with the horror aspect, I know that, you know, movies have come out like The Grudge with Sarah Michelle Gellar. And I was like, oh, it's based on this Japanese one. So I've gone back and rented Ju-on and I loved it so much more than the American version, which kind of it makes you kind of appreciate like the Spanish horror movies and the Japanese. They have their own what is horror in their cultures. And you get to see that. It's fascinating also to kind of go off on a tangent here.
Well, that's kind of the neat thing of, you know, back then when I saw the original Ju-on first, and then I saw the remake, and I'm like, of course, the original was better. And then just recently, I re-rented The Grudge from the library, and it was amazing compared to all the crap that's made now. So it's like I was able to kind of revisit it and say, you know, it wasn't so bad for a remake, and, you know, it had some great stuff. And it was the same director as Ju-on anyway, so it was kind of a neat thing for Sam Raimi back then to find this guy and love this movie and then bring it a remake, and it's like, hey, it worked. And it's, you know, seeing it again older and wiser and seeing so much crap in between there, I've kind of appreciated it a lot more.
I'm one of those people, I love horror movies because I love to be scared. Like, I'll go in there and my friend who goes with me is like, you're going to make commentary during the film, aren't you? Because I'm like, no, what are you doing? Don't go in that room. And I can't help myself. But as a filmmaker and someone who makes horror movies and has been involved in the genre and you've got to, you know, this is your craft. Are you able to shut off the part of your brain that's kind of picking apart movies like that when you go see horror films? Are you able to just sit down and enjoy it? Or is that little part of your brain always ticking?
No, you know, I'm totally into even bad movies. I'm able to find good qualities within them. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Ed Wood. I'm a huge fan of, you know, Al Adamson, because I kind of see these guys that they had no money and a limited time, and they got, you know, whoever they could get together, whether it be, hey, we can get Bela Lugosi for one day, let's put him in there and let's go do this, and they got it done and they made it, and we're still talking about him. I mean, that's something. Yeah. That's admirable to me, as you know, when I make these things for no money and no time, and you know, you just do the best you can with what you got and you hope that it finds an audience, and you know, knock on wood that, you know, I get them done and I get them made, and you know, keep doing it and doing it and doing it, and then one day you'll make something that, you know, everyone can kind of get around and say, hey, this is the one he'll be remembered for, you know, or something like that. But for me, it's just about keeping busy and moving on to other projects. I've got three other ones that we're doing that we've finished post on, and now I'm writing another script. So it's just about keeping busy and having fun doing it.
We've got our friend Chance Bartels from Atlanta chiming in the chats here. He does a great show called The Nostalgic Pod Blast. He said there was a terrifying Alfred Hitchcock hour with Ed Asner as the father of a psychotic kid who kills the new neighbor's dog. I don't recall that one, Chance, but I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one, Chad.
No, but it sounds great. I mean, one of the ones I remember, I think it was called Open Window or something, where it had a nurse. I don't want to spoil it, but the nurse was taking care of someone, and then a serial killer got loose, and it was a great kind of a transgender before that term got coined, but it was really one of the creepiest episodes, or the kid growing the mushrooms. I mean, there's so many that were just so fantastic, and you know, that you're just like, oh, what was that one with Ed Asner? You know, it's just, there's so many that were so, and the pool of talent, you know, from, you know, Friedkin to, you know, whoever started out on directing these episodes, but way back when, is just phenomenal. And it's great to relook at them and then read up the history on them. I mean, I know the Twilight Zone has a great companion book, and so does Alfred Hitchcock Presents, where you can kind of find out all those details. Again, you can on the internet as well, but it's one of those things when nothing, again, better going to the library, getting the book, and that smell and that feel, and that, to me, it's just an amazing experience.
No, that's one of the I've said before that if someone asks if you had to get rid of all TV except for one series, the original 1960s Twilight Zone, those five seasons of that, I wouldn't trade those for anything else. And they always say that, why do certain people now, when they do horror or they do a specific drama, they take 3 hours to do what Rod Serling was doing in 22 minutes?
It's right. No, it's an amazing thing. And I wish they would kind of go back to that. I've been watching a lot of the old Gunsmoke. Oh, and the half hour episodes are so good. You know, the hour ones are okay. They're fine. You know, it's an amazing show that was on for 20 damn years. But those original half an hour episodes in black and white with, you know, Dennis Weaver and they're phenomenal. I mean, it really is what they were able to do in the, you know, that 20, like you said, 22 minutes is amazing.
Yeah, my dad was significantly older than me. He had me at an older age, but he was big into Westerns. That, for some reason, never translated over to me, but we watched the original Star Trek series in syndication together, and that kind of gave me my love for sci-fi. The horror, I have no idea, because my dad didn't like it, my mom doesn't like it, so maybe that's just something I acquired on my own. But for the movie Scalper, you've got a great cast on this, too. Do you involve yourself in the entire process, including the casting on movies, or is it you kind of leave that up to other people?
No, I mean, even the catering and craft service, I have to do, you know, it's, you know, we're, to be honest, we make the budget on Scalper was $100,000. It was shot in 9 days.
Wow.
The script was written in 2 weeks. To me, I edited the film in 2 weeks, and, you know, then I send it off to my post guys, you know, Jeff Billings, who does the color correction, Matt Olivo, or we'll do the sound. And, you know, it's kind of a team family effort of people who I've worked with before, and, you know, you just kind of get that machine going, and they know my style, and the time is fast, and we have little money to do it, but we just, you know, do the best we can.
And it's amazing to me, and we've talked about this with other directors and writers and producers on the show before, that it seems like now people are almost eschewing the big budget blockbusters. You see their kind of return are diminishing, whereas the indie stuff that we're seeing has been growing. What would you attribute that to? Are people just tired of the big, huge spectacle and kind of want that story-driven narrative? What would you say it's attributed to?
I think, you know, a lot has to do with it, because when they're spending that much money, there's so many, it's like a board of people saying, oh, you can't do that. It's, you know, it's making a movie by committee. And I think, you know, the auteurism is kind of gone. It's you know, not like Dino De Laurentiis giving David Lynch, you know, whatever it was to make Dune, and kind of giving him a free rein to go do it. And it was a bomb. So it kind of wrecked whatever was going to be after that, but it still gave him it. You know, that film has his imprint all over it. I mean, that's a David Lynch film, and it's, you know, it's raw and it's whatever, and it has its faults, but it's still that filmmaker's vision. And I think a lot of these big blockbuster things are made by, you know, five people saying, oh, take that out, or don't do that, or cast this person because they're a certain color, or whatever it might be, and we have to fit this demographic, and it just kind of takes away. I mean, I wouldn't want to make a film like that. So I think, you know, it becomes more about money and about, you know, turning a profit instead of, you know, making a film that's of quality, you know.
We mentioned earlier, too, that you were working with Troma TV, obviously, Lloyd Kaufman. You got to work with James Gunn and Ron Jeremy in the same project, if I'm not mistaken. That must have been pretty amazing. Now you look early on in your career, you're doing the kind of things with those people, and then kind of see the especially direction James Gunn's taken. That's got to be kind of rewarding to say, I had this early on, and kind of have that as a notch on your belt, as it were.
Yeah, no, James, you know, he was a great guy back then. I mean, I remember talking to him while we were shooting a scene, and he had just written Dawn of the Dead, or they were in pre-production on it, so he had sold the script or however, or was hired to write it, and it worked out, and he was just saying, yeah, they're about to shoot this film that I wrote. It's a remake of Dawn of the Dead, and, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, wow, this is... he's made it, you know, it was one of those things and it turned out, you know, it was a good film. And then he's just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And now he's, you know, huge. So, and I think that's, you know, part of the thing. If you keep at it and you have a love for it, you know, no matter how small you start or where you start, as long as you keep it, or even what, how much talent you have. I mean, as long as you keep at it, you know, and have fun doing it, and you're doing it because you love it, you know, only good things can happen for you. You know, I don't aspire for Steven Spielberg to call me up and give me a huge gig. I don't, you know, wait by the phone. I just, you know, take what I have and make what I make and have fun doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that kind of shows too, in the projects you do, there is that element of you obviously enjoy it. I mean, just that kind of, as weird as that is to say, the fun kind of comes across in your horror movies, if that makes any sense. It did in my brain anyway. But I'm curious, because obviously when you're doing horror and you're writing them and everything like that, what is it that, do you write stuff that you personally find scary, or do you take kind of just ideas, like you dream them and you jot them down as soon as you wake up? What scares you?
Politics, I guess.
I think that's everybody.
The world turning into 1984. I mean, where, you know, and I see, I've kind of tuned off and stopped watching the news or even talking politics on set, because it's just something that's changed. I mean, I remember, you know, years ago when none of that really mattered to me before, and then I got a little into politics, and there would be arguments, and there'd be all these things, and then I was like, why are we talking about this nonsense? There's nothing we're changing about any of this, so yeah. Why talk about it? It's just like, you know, it's just something, we have differences, whatever it is, but we also have a love for movies, so let's just talk about that, and, you know, call it, it's, you know, like politics and religion, they always tell you not to talk about it at a dinner table or family get-togethers, and that's wise, you know.
Right, and the Great Pumpkin, according to Charlie Brown, those were the three things. The Great Pumpkin was the third, politics and religion. We're finishing up our talk here with director Chad Farron. The movie is Scalper, and it's out as of the 16th, so it's already out on demand, correct?
Yes, yes, yes.
And I know we talked about earlier the physical media, and I'm one of those people, I want the DVD because I want the director's commentary. I want to be able to go through the menu page. You know, they can change things on streaming. Do you, as the director and writer and creator of some of these, do you push for this to be out on physical media, or is that just kind of out of your hands sometimes?
No, I demand that, and I have it in every contract of every film I have. So they're putting out Scalper on Blu-ray and DVD and all that stuff, I believe, in March.
Great. Okay. So it'll be out for a couple months and then out on Blu-ray, the way things used to do. You'd have to wait at least a few months back in the day
for
stuff to come out after you saw it in the theater on Blu-ray. So that's great.
Yeah, so a great Breaking Glass, which is a great company that I've dealt with on the last couple films, they partnered up with an amazing company called Vinegar Syndrome that really does top-notch work. So there's commentary, there's deleted scenes, there's all that stuff that, you know, for me, that was a great thing of, you know, buying a Laserdisc back in the day, like Bad Day at Black Rock, and listening to John Sturges' commentary was like, you know, a film school right there.
It's, yeah.
You know, when you find good commentaries, like John Carpenter, whoever, that does something that you're like glued to and you're very informative, and it really is an amazing thing. You know, it's like I said, it's not only informative, entertaining, it's just a great way to kind of connect with your heroes, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that, of course, if you really like it or you really want to, you want to hear that commentary. You want to find out, oh, this scene was an accident, or this actor improv this line. I love that behind the scenes stuff, because you feel like you're sitting there with the director on set, like learning about the movie. It's just, for me, it's one of those things. I'm a movie buff, though, so I enjoy that aspect of it particularly.
Sure. No, and it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I did a film called Parasites. And we company put it out, and they did the Bells and Whistles Blu-ray, and it's a great thing. And we were recording a commentary with me and the couple of the actors and the producers. And, you know, I got so drunk that it was one of those things I had forgotten to, you know, eat that morning. And I was nervous and whatever. I hadn't done one in a while. So I ended up drinking, you know, half a bottle of whiskey. And before I knew it, I'm just like... We finished it, and I finished it, and I'm like, I hope, you know, you couldn't tell that I was shit-faced. But, you know, and then I went and puked my guts out for, you know, 2 hours at the studio. So it was one of those things that, you know, it's one of those just little neat things that, you know, that you find out, and then you're like, hey, I get drunk all the time, so I can connect to this guy, or, you know, you can relate to. I hated the movie, but I liked that he got drunk. You know, right. It's those things that, you know, you can find the good side of things, even if you don't like the film or whatever it is. At least I try to, you know, like I was saying with Ed Wood and those things, even through all the warts and stuff, when you know the trials and tribulations they went through, you can respect that they got it done and it got out there and it found an audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if you're listening, the movie Scalper is out on demand as of January 16th, so you should be able to see it there. And as Chad just said, it'll be out for your physical media collection in March. We'll have a link to that as soon as we see that it's available. We'll put a link to that so that you can pick it up. If people want to keep up with you, we've just got about 30 seconds left. Website, social media handles, if people want to find out more about you or interact with you.
Yeah, just type in my name, Chad Farron, to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. I'm out there and, you know, I'm hawking the films and trying to get people to watch them.
Perfect. So glad you're able to join us. Thanks for the time on a Sunday night. It's always great to have the guests on live. So we appreciate your time. Hopefully we can talk again soon.
Let's do it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Be well. There he goes, Chad Farron. Again, the movie is Scalper. You can check that out. Make sure you do. The hour is blown by. We're wrapping it up here. I'm going to get everything going and fire off the sound effects. I'm talking to you as I do it to make sure I'm doing it correctly. Thank you, of course, to Joey V for making the show sound and look as good as it does. I'm worried because we're in Studio D. You can probably tell the studio's different. If I grab the wrong thing, I'm going to break the cameras. So Joey V is across from me. That's why you have video tonight. So thank you to Joey V for always making the show sound and look as good as it does. Thank you to all of you in the chats for listening tonight. Thank you very much to our sponsors.
StarTheWayYouWatchISZombie.com.
Check out the Justice League.
It's not in the way you watch The Flash.
Wherever you get your podcast from, Susan Eisenberg and I just dropped our latest episode talking to Carl Lumber, the voice of the Martian Manhunter. So check that one out. New one drop every other Tuesday on your podcast platforms. If you're a fan of Justice League, check that out. And Legend of the Traveling TARDIS, 38 years ago since we lost Space Shuttle Challenger today. That was, I remember where I was. People might remember as well. Thanks, Christian Basin, for pointing that out. Legend of the Traveling TARDIS, check them out as well. Until next week, my friends.
This is Geek To Me Radio.
Thank you, Gotham City. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.